This podcast is brought to you by Aviation Safety Magazine, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention.
Hello, you're listening to Glenn Pugh for AvWeb.com. On May 4, 2010, the crew of an American Airlines 767 out of Los Angeles for New York declared an emergency after being denied their runway of choice at JFK. The event brought attention to the congestion at JFK Airport and the way both controllers and pilots acted in the situation. But there were a lot of other factors involved that most people just don't know. Today we're speaking with Jason Goldberg, a 13-year American Airlines pilot who happens to fly out of JFK. Jason, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure, Glenn.
Before we get into this, let me just add that Jason has accumulated more than 15,000 hours flying time. He's flown as engineer, co-pilot, or captain on the 727, the MD-80, the 757, the 767, and Airbus A300. That said, Jason isn't speaking for the airline. What you're getting are insights from one man's experience. It just so happens that this one man could just as easily have been captain of that flight on May 4. So, Jason, let's start with some perspective. In broad strokes, what's it like flying into and out of JFK for a major airline?
Well, Glenn, it's an extremely challenging airport. Over the last 4 or 5 years, JFK has been opened up to more traffic due to a elimination of the slotting system. So as a result, you have a tremendous amount of traffic congestion, everything from small regional jet aircraft to some general aviation aircraft, all the way up to major transcontinental flights and heavy aircraft. Because of the complexities of the airspace in the New York area, with Newark and LaGuardia being so close, JFK is considerably constrained by the geography of the airspace. That combined with some other factors, including cultural issues where foreign carriers are dealing with the rapid-fire transmission of the JFK air traffic controllers, makes it a very complex, very challenging airport to fly in and out of. It's the type of place where you really have to pay extra attention.
So as you're flying in, what certain things do you go through? What rituals might take place in your head that really prepare you as you approach the area? What on the human factors side, what pressures complicate normal concerns?
Well, Glenn, flying into Kennedy, if you're flying in on a weather day, first of all, which is very typical in the summer, even in the spring and fall months, you have to realize that you're going to have limited areas for weather deviation. So right off the bat, you have to have a plan for avoiding any buildups or cells, if applicable. And then as you get a little bit closer to JFK, you have very typically airspeed and altitude constraints that must be met exactly. Requires a great deal of advanced planning for descent and airspeed control. Then going into JFK, you have to realize that generally you are going to be landing on a runway that will not necessarily be aligned with the wind. You may very well be doing a non-precision approach that requires visual alignment with a runway. So typically, you're going to have to start your briefing with the rest of the crew and your mental preparation quite far away from the airport. It does require another level of concentration from some of the less congested, less complex airports that we fly in and out of at the airlines.
Now, I think these days, especially, a lot of people who aren't in the business imagine that there are added pressures on airline pilots that come from the airlines management to keep fuel burn down, to keep the schedule on time. Do those fantasies have any bearing on your reality?
Well, certainly the management side of the airline does try to pressure flight crew to conserve fuel, to operate the flights as economically as possible. However, at the same time, as pilots, we realize that the number one mandate that we have, the number one job we have, is to operate the flights safely. So whereas, in fact, we may take the other issues into consideration, and it's certainly true that airline management does attempt to make that a priority in our mind, we are focused solely on safety, and that's the main priority when we're flying into an airport like JFK or any airport.
Are there any particular cases where you're second-guessed? Do you ever have to defend yourself to management or no?
Well, as management is dealing with a more and more competitive airline industry, certainly we will we'll have to explain ourselves if we do request extra fuel, for instance, on a given flight. But generally it's understood by airline management since the mandate is under the federal aviation regulations that if the flight crew and specifically the captain determines that extra fuel is required, then that's the last word. And whereas management may try to exert some pressure, at the end of the day, it's the captain and the dispatcher's decision. And functionally, what that means is that it's the captain's decision. If he wants to go flying with 3,000 extra pounds of gas, that's what's going to happen. And management can question it after the fact, but at the end of the day, it is the pilot's responsibility.
Okay, so when we get into something like the event that happened on May 4th, what are your thoughts there?
Well, as we talked about before, Glenn, you have a situation where you have competing agendas. You have the controllers who are certainly as concerned with safety as pilots are, but they don't fly the aircraft. And their management is extremely aggressive in trying to get them to move as much traffic as quickly as possible in order to avoid delays. On the other hand, you have a crew of experienced pilots who probably flies in and out of John F. Kennedy on the majority of their trips and is very, very familiar with the weather conditions at Kennedy. And what you have is a situation where a pilot was asked to land on a runway that from a wind point of view, from a crosswind or tailwind point of view, he did not consider to be safe. So he exercised his emergency authority and chose to land on another runway.
Now, do you have hard limits for crosswinds that are set forth by either the manufacturer or the airline?
We do, and these limits vary certainly by airline to airline. They're associated with either the aircraft or the operator, depending on which is more limiting. But at the end of the day, those limits are maximums, and there are a number of factors that the captain may look at that suggest to him that it would be wise to set lower maximums on those given days. I didn't pull out a crosswind limitation chart for the particular event on May 4th, but I can tell you that the event was right up against the limits for the runway that the controllers wanted the pilots to land on. And the captain clearly made a decision that on that day, under those circumstances, that it wasn't a safe operation.
Well, and I guess it's that clear decision that's raised a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking on this one from general aviation pilots. Some feel the conversation between the pilot and controller shows the controller's lack of understanding. Others feel the pilot was too abrupt in calling the emergency. Give us a feel for the dynamics at play here.
Well, I think you have to understand, Glenn, that from the pilot point of view, this pilot, this flight crew, this captain, probably has flown into JFK many, many times. And on many occasions, he has been led into a situation where he's landing on a runway right up against the wind limits. And clearly, it creates a cumulative effect over time. Perhaps this captain made a landing which was safe, but for him was not within his margin of comfort. So you have to look at this as a cumulative effect of many trips into the same operational theater. And whereas as a singular incident, the fact that he declared an emergency might have appeared to be overly abrupt, if you look at it in context of a pilot who has been kind of led into this situation by the controllers a number of times, it becomes more logical. From the controller's point of view, I can't really speculate on what the controller was thinking, but you know, we know as pilots and in conversations with our controllers and with the FAA through liaisons with our union that there's a tremendous amount of the pressure on these controllers in order to move as much traffic as possible in the shortest amount of time. So clearly what he was interested in doing was expediting the traffic flow.
From the pilot's perspective, what are the practical implications of saying, I'm not taking that runway, give me another one, and not declaring an emergency?
Well, that's a good point, Glenn, because very often if a pilot requests another runway, the controller will cite a long delay, 20 minutes, a half an hour, 45 minutes. And there's some speculation amongst pilots that that's just the controllers trying to manipulate the pilot into accepting the runway that's being used at the airport. For me, I believe it's just more a matter of when the traffic flow is set up for a certain runway, generally it does take a certain amount of maneuvering and vectoring in order to allow the pilot to proceed to another runway without an emergency being declared. So certainly there are situations where you'll hear pilots request another runway. The controller will cite a long delay. Clearly the pilot does a certain amount of mental calculation and says, well, it is still a safe situation. It's preferable for me to take the runway that may not be aligned with the wind as opposed to taking the delay. You know, the reason for that might be for fuel considerations. It might just be for passenger convenience. But that kind of exchange does go on regularly at JFK.
So is something like what happened on May 4th, the pilot declaring an emergency, is that out of the ordinary for JFK, would you say?
I would say it's out of the ordinary, Glenn, but I can certainly tell you that it's something that's probably on most pilots' minds who operate in and out of Kennedy on a frequent basis. There is a certain amount of discomfort on the airline pilot side with the way the airport is operated. And I think that if you asked a number of my peers honestly, they would tell you that they think the captain made the right choice, if only to make a point, and would probably like to make that choice themselves.
Do you have any idea what sort of ramifications a pilot might face for making that call with those motives?
I don't think there'd be any implications, Glenn. I think that pilots under the FARs are allowed to exercise their emergency authority when they think it prudent. The pilot was not, I'm sure, doing it out of any other motivation other than to create a safer atmosphere at JFK, perhaps to drive home his concerns that on more than one occasion, pilots had been asked to land on a runway that were not as safe as possible. And I think that under the circumstances, the pilot would be asked to file a paperwork report with the company. He may or may not have a short phone conversation with the FAA. And at the end of the day, that would be all. He simply made the call that he's qualified and paid to make. And I think that anyone who operates in and out of JFK, either from a flight crew point of view, as an air traffic controller, or as an FAA supervisor, understands the challenges and why he did what he did.
Now, how about the runway closure when this happened? I believe it's JFK's longest runway that was shut down for improvement during the time frame. Might that have been a factor here?
Well, they did close runway 31 left and 13 right, the longest runway at JFK, the Bay runway, for repair and restoration. But to be honest, I didn't notice, and I think many of my peers didn't notice, a huge change as a result of that. Most of the airlines voluntarily reduced the number of slots, number of operations that they did in and out of JFK during that period. They instituted a very very effective slot time system where aircraft were allowed to taxi for takeoff at specific times. By the way, a system that was proved so effective that they're probably going to retain it, even now that the runway has reopened. I think that this problem really predates the runway closure and will certainly endure in the aftermath of the runway closure. It's simply a matter of the operation of certain runways at Kennedy interferes with the airspace at LaGuardia and Newark, and the air traffic controllers are trying to find a way to move traffic effectively within the constraints of the very complicated New York airspace.
And along those lines, what are your feelings about the two jobs, controller and captain, and how they're handled now, and how the situation at JFK might be improved?
Well, ideally, Glenn, it's always a happy medium. I think we all understand the fact that the airline industry is a very, very difficult, tumultuous industry right now from an economic point of view. We also know that the FAA is under a tremendous amount of pressure from the public to reduce the delays within the airline system. So I think that the best possible solution is a happy medium, a recognition on the controller side that when the wind or the weather conditions approach a certain reasonable level, that let's say pilots and controllers could get together and agree upon, then the airplanes will be operated into the wind. Up to that point, certainly pilots are equipped to handle crosswinds and even a small amount of tailwind. We do it all the time, both operationally and training. And as long as those more restrictive limits aren't approached, pilots can continue to operate, you know, in and out of the runways that are most convenient for the controllers. So I think what it's going to take is a dialogue between the controllers, the FAA, the pilots, the pilot unions, and the airlines to arrive at a more reasonable margin of safety that will make everyone comfortable. Until then, I think we can expect incidents like this and incidents that happen every day that you don't hear about, where pilots take the 25 or 30-minute delay in order to land into the wind and you know, passengers are late, connections are missed, or so on and so forth. You know, this is because an emergency was declared, this was a little more of a glamorous incident, but incidents that are similar occur regularly at Kennedy, and they're to no one's benefit. So I think ultimately at the end of the day, what we're going to need to see is some kind of meeting of the minds between the stakeholders.
We appreciate your experience, Jason. Thanks for this little peek into the world of an airline pilot at JFK.
I enjoyed it, Glenn. Thanks for having me.
We've been speaking with Jason Goldberg, 13-year pilot for American Airlines. For AvWeb.com, I'm Glenn Pugh. Thanks for listening.
This podcast has been brought to you by Aviation Safety Magazine. For more on aviation safety, log on to www.aviationsafetymagazine.com.